This is going to be just like listening to the show, except you'll be on it.
Whoa. No.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus, and David Hetty, do you want to be the co-host today?
I'd love to. Thank you.
You would have the second
and
line.
I am Aaron Flores.
Except you're not.
We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Yes, we, that was my line. So we're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, the internet, and many other things. And today, long-distance bike touring. I am pleased to welcome you, first of all, Hetty. Thank you.
Yeah, it's
how long has it been
back
since you've co-hosted?
At least a year.
Okay, yeah. And I don't even remember who was on the show that time.
So I'm a little anal, so I'm going to get that line in that was supposed to be mine.
Oh, which one?
We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So just so everyone knows where we are.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Well, hey, we got that out of the way. So we are in the room with Chris and Heidi, and you guys are on the tail end of a cross-continental bicycle journey, right?
It is great to be in Portland now.
Yeah, so thank you. Thanks for coming out. I'm excited to hear all about it, and I know that there's no way that you can take... How long has it been? Is it 8 weeks?
It's been 2 months and about
2 months.
5 days.
Okay.
Yep.
So you guys were kind of... You were making good time.
Well, thank you. Sometimes
yeah.
It feels that way. Other
we're
times
not taking
we
the most direct route, so
okay.
I think we could have done it faster if we went straight across. But we kind of lollied around, saw some beautiful places, met some people.
Well, very good. So that in that case, then you're on the very end of that, and you're here to share some stories. So we can't compress 8 weeks of experiences into the time that we have, but we do want to hear some of the highlights. So.
All right, we'll do our best shot.
Yeah. So you guys, first of all, maybe let's start with where you began and where you are from.
We're both from Philadelphia. We are most recently. We graduated college and got married, moved to Philly, lived there for 3 years, saved up a little money, paid our student loans, and quit our jobs in Philly so we would have a chance to do this.
There we go.
Before we start the next thing. So
your student loans are all paid off?
Yes, they are.
Congratulations.
So happy
it's
about
a good
that.
Place to be.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'm a nurse, so it was a little bit easier for
me. Does that mean you have to work crazy hours?
No, actually, I did home health.
Okay.
And not in the hospital. So
you get out of the typical nursing
beginning. Yeah, it was
beginning.
More 9 to 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're actually pretty lucky, right? Because most people that begin like in hospitals and whatnot with nursing end up doing like night shift for 5 or 6 years or something like
that.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah,
kind of like TriMet bus drivers here in town start like working on like Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the major holidays.
Oh, wow.
Like at the earliest and latest times of the day. Basically, at the stuff that no one else wants. So
you got to be there for 10 years to get a normal. Yeah.
To get your tenure.
Yeah.
As
tenure,
it were.
I get it.
Yeah. And David, you apparently have a connection to these folks, which is partially why you're here. Also because you're a good co-host.
Thank you. So, yeah, I worked with Heidi's dad for several years.
There we
go. Dwayne Hirschberger, how you doing? And
Shout out.
Hey,
Dad.
So, yeah, and I guess Dwayne sent me an email with their blog, and I checked out their blog, and I'm like, these folks would be perfect for the show.
Yeah.
So, always thinking about you and Aaron, Brock, and how I can contribute to the good work happening here.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You bet.
So we probably should not go any farther without describe. We are having some beverages, and I am you and I both are actually splitting a bottle of Viso. And what flavor is this? I forgot.
I think it's lemon lime.
Lemon lime, and there's like something else in it. It's like a kiwi fruit or something like that. I think.
I wouldn't know.
That's
I
okay.
I didn't read it that close.
No, no worries. But Viso is one of the Portland area's own energy beverages. It's made mostly of natural ingredients. So I've been a fiend for the Rockstar energy beverages for a while, and I'm trying whenever I get the energy beverage now to choose a more natural alternative. So this is what I've got.
And they still inject it with caffeine.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. That's why you buy it.
Exactly.
Even if it's better for you.
And I've had a little cold, so it's helping me.
There we go. Cool. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we split it instead of sharing a bottle.
I'd be sleeping if I wasn't here. I'm just joking.
Yeah. Well, no, I understand. That's a big sacrifice of you, sir, to come out and give up your nap. So, and then you folks are you're fans of the IPA, as I hear.
Sure are. And Oregon has awesome IPAs, by the way.
I'd like to think that they do. Yeah.
Like the best I've ever had.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's good.
The last three straight we've had each have been like the best.
Yeah.
Better
like,
than
wait,
last
I thought
one,
that so. One was the best. Nope. This one's definitely the best.
Okay.
Climbing
and
to the mountain.
And this one has competition. I forget what it's called.
Yeah. This is the Hopworks IPA, and you're sure, by the way, that it's not just the hops burning out your taste buds, and that's why you think it's the best, even if it might not be.
I mean, that would be a fair criticism.
But I'd like to think we have some quality hops being used here,
yeah,
and sometimes
absolutely.
Grown here. Most of them, you've ridden down towards Silverton, right, David?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, when I ride down towards Silverton, I have seen just south of, I'm going to forget the small town's name. It's like the county line between Marion County and Clackamas County, and it's south of Canby, Oregon. So somewhere down there, close to Mount Angel, there are a bunch of hop plants all being grown, and they grow to ridiculously tall proportions.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure they're hops. I'm pretty sure. I've never verified it with the farmer.
So is it the Sterling hops? Is that the one that's so popular
I'm
here?
I'm already over my head as far as knowledge is concerned. Yeah. I don't really know. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of a magical thing when you pulled out the Hopworks, because I was telling them last night,
okay,
if you had more time, I'd take you over to Hopworks.
Oh, and
my
is this,
favorite brewery in
does
town.
That mean you two are not going to be able to go to Hopworks?
We don't know when we're leaving Portland yet.
Okay.
Probably sometime today, but we might have time.
Gotcha. Well, there's one
directions.
Pretty close to here. I think we could make that happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
It might just have to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's more of that IPA where it came from. And it's all brewed just down there on Powell Boulevard.
Awesome.
So, yeah. And then the second one, we'll get to that when you crack it open. But that's the Cavatica Stout from Fort George Brewing out in Astoria.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looks delicious.
Well, without delay, then, we should probably get into the nitty-gritty. You guys started in Philadelphia, and you started working your way west. So, first of all, what inspired the bicycle tour, and were you a bicyclist before you began?
Yeah, I've been commuting to work ever since college, so 3 years or so in Philly, various jobs. And we, for our whole relationship, have enjoyed taking bike rides together, and we did a two-week trip to Georgia from Philly. During college, and it was a pretty rough trip. We didn't really know what we were doing.
Uh-huh.
But I think ever since then, it burned something into kind of our minds that one day we want to like do the whole country. So
yeah. So that's the state of Georgia from Philadelphia?
Yeah.
And it was only 2 weeks?
2 weeks, yeah.
So you guys must have been barreling on that one, too.
We had a pretty tight...
It's actually 13 days. Yeah.
Okay.
We had a pretty tight timeline, and it was like we were doing a volunteer internship for the summer down there. And
okay.
Like, if you're not here this day... We won't train you, and you won't be able to do the summer.
Gotcha.
So
it's pretty high stakes. We
okay.
were a little scared.
That makes sense.
We didn't take a single rest day. We were like cruising.
Yeah.
And it's not the prettiest part of the country either. So
sure.
It was kind of head down and ride.
But somehow
it didn't kill it for us. So
right.
We're doing this now, and it's been fabulous.
So that means you have to like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, before this Georgia trip, we took just a short weekend trip from our college in Harrisonburg, Virginia, back up to Philadelphia at the end of the... school year.
Okay.
And in the middle of the trip, we actually got engaged.
Aw.
So
nice.
Biking has a special place in our hearts.
There we go.
For multiple reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, are your rings engraved with any sort of bicycle part?
They should
or
be.
They're,
it's
they're
okay.
Round.
I didn't expect it. They are round, like the wheel
round,
of a bicycle.
Exactly.
Okay.
Cyclical.
And there's
nice.
Two of them. So.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is all it needs is it needs the frame of your love and care for each other.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, well, congratulations. That's actually.
Cheesy, but we'll go with it.
I'd like to think that's my specialty. So, congratulations on having the bicycle as such a central part of your existence.
Yeah.
So you guys left Philadelphia about 8 weeks and what was it, 5 days ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 2 months and 5 days. So May 6th.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Which
and
seems forever ago right now.
Yeah. you had a taste of bicycle travel before. So the travel wasn't new. Was there anything different about this trip aside from the length that you hadn't experienced before?
Well, the length is definitely like everything.
For one,
we started just in a very kind of different mindset that this was we closed our apartment down, like we quit our jobs, and this was something that was going to be like a significant chapter of our life. So I think from the beginning, it was hard to not be a little antsy to like get into the thick of it and seeing incredible things and learning things. When the first few weeks, it was just like, we're biking hard, we're not in shape for this, camping's a lot more work than we remembered. Mm-hmm. It was definitely a rough start. We had to go right over the Appalachian Mountains from the beginning.
And those are steep. East Coast mountains generally more jagged.
They're so brutal.
Yeah.
And there's no accomplishment. You don't like reach a peak and a pass and take a picture with the snow. It's just
staring
just
at
up
the
and
next
down
one.
And up and down and up and down. You gain no elevation. So
gotcha.
Those are very hard.
That sounds brutal.
So you have taken a northern route, correct?
Yeah. Out of Philly, we went straight north through New York State and like the Finger Lakes. And then we went up into Canada through Niagara Falls and Ontario. And then from there, we went to Michigan, then took a ferry across Lake Michigan into Wisconsin.
90 miles.
Nice.
Free.
Yeah.
Wow.
Free riding.
Best
it was
90
awesome.
Miles.
So that's a free ride across Lake Michigan?
No, it's not
no,
a free ride.
Oh, gotcha.
Free
as
in not free pedaling. Miles.
As relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Energy is more important than money.
There we go. Right.
Lake trip.
Right.
And then from there, so Minnesota. In South Dakota, then Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. And
okay.
Hopefully we'll hit California. And
yeah.
That's kind of the path. So.
Nice. So are you going to be bicycling in California, or is that kind of a stop off on the way home?
Hopefully we'll make it to California.
Okay.
Our flight leaves from San Francisco in 9 days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. And I don't think we'll be able to make it quite to San Francisco by that time. So we'll probably take a bus for the last chunk or rent
sure.
a car or something.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. If we had like 3 days, I would feel so ambitious and be like, we have to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time's dwindling.
I'm trying to remember. I just spoke yesterday to a listener who was in from out of town. Tim Mooney is his name. And I think by the time this airs, his episode will already have aired. Mm-hmm. But off the show, he and I were hanging out and he told me something about a trip he was taking where for a one-way car rental, Eureka, California is your last chance before San Francisco for a one-way.
Okay.
Fort Bragg apparently has a rental agency. But you have to bring the vehicle back to where you got it from.
That's really? Good to know.
So, yeah. So if you get to Eureka in 9 days, and I don't think that's impossible.
Yeah.
Seems like
that's actually
be...
my new goal.
Okay.
Eureka. Oh, wow.
Eureka. Yeah.
We haven't talked about this.
Yes. Okay. I've mentioned it.
Yeah. You're smithing it out on right on the show
I
in front of everybody.
I think we can make it to Eureka, and then we'll talk about that.
The, the winds look good this time of year for the first time all trip. So
oh, yeah.
We're
okay.
hoping to just fly.
Yeah.
And not
have
to pedal.
Yeah. So there's some interesting things I saw when I was looking at your blog, and I think I told you I was kind of frantically doing my research yesterday. So that was the first time I was exposed to the stuff. So you'll have to fill me on what I haven't read yet. But for anybody that wants to check it out, it's cyclicalsimplicity.com, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I saw in your kind of about us page was just the idea that you're not really worried that much about time. For the good time that you're making, this isn't about getting somewhere in a specified amount of time or pushing yourselves too hard. And what made me think of that was you talking about wind. And I think there was some description that you put in one of the posts about learning when to fight the wind and when just to give up and enjoy it when the wind gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had a lot of sort of giving up days or moments. Because when you're just exposed to the elements all the time, you really, you know, we don't have shelter. We can set up a tent, but if there's 30 miles an hour winds blowing our tent, like it was in Cody, Wyoming, we didn't sleep at all, you know, during the night, or if the rain's pouring down on you. So, the elements are a little bit difficult, and I feel like a lot of times I just want to give up. And, we have a lot of very low lows and a lot of really high highs is what we found. And that's kind of been life the last 2 months, and it's been good.
Yeah.
I would recommend it to anybody.
And we kind of came into the trip saying we're going to do like 65 miles a day and we're going to plan it out and every time find a spot to go. But then the first 2 weeks, I don't think we hit 60 once. We did short days and we did long days.
Okay.
And then as time went on, eventually we just kind of gave up and said like, It still averages out to about 60.
Yeah.
But it's just unrealistic in the real world to sit down and say, I'm going to do the same amount, when sometimes there's a wind blowing your face, other times it's your back. Sometimes you're going up a mountain, other times you're on flat ground. So I think what this trip has taught us to do is plan less and learn to deal with what comes up.
Yeah.
That we're pretty capable of that, of whatever happens, not pushing ourselves if we feel awful. And there's a pass we didn't know about, and we do 25 miles one day.
Which happened a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of passes we did not see coming.
We can take that.
We went for, like, I don't know, 10 miles straight uphill. We're like, what is this place? Why do we know about this? And it turned out we had gone 2,700 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, I forget the pass name. It was Idaho or something. Mm-hmm. But that happens a lot. A lot of stuff sneaks up on us.
Yeah, but then there's also great days where... we show up and there's like a 20 mile per hour wind at our back, and we've been expecting, everybody's telling us we're going the wrong way, going east to west because of the wind, but we have these amazing days and we can ride 100 something miles and feel great.
Right. You have something on the website that kind of with like graphics and everything. Is that the mail?
Mailman.
Hey, the mail's here. Yeah. Awesome. There's something about the way that everything, I totally lost my train of thought. Oh, graphs and the jet stream and the idea that the jet stream and the prevailing winds are not necessarily super connected to each other. Obviously, they're influenced.
Although, closer to the coast, we're finding. Because when we hit Oregon is when we got straight west winds whole time. Like, I don't think we had a single day with winds on our backs.
On the Columbia on 84.
Yeah.
Especially.
And then 14 before that.
14.
Yeah, the Columbia River Gorge is notorious for a very strong west wind most of the time.
Yeah.
That's why the Hood River area, you see all the... What are they? Windsurfers?
Windsurfers and kite surfers.
Sailboarders.
And there was one guy we saw that was really getting a lot of air the last time I was out there.
Wow.
It was like 30-foot jumps and stuff. It's ridiculous. Wow. But that's because of the strong wind. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we can bike 20 miles an hour some days.
And two some
and
other
five
days.
Five other days.
Yeah, yeah.
So somewhat related to that, what you're asking, Brock, or what you were mentioning there, was in one of your posts you talked about your... the day before looking up your route and checking weather and that sort of thing. And you kind of have just stopped doing that. I don't know. Maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we check winds, still when we're planning, especially when we're planning to do like a big day the next day, we want to know, you know, should we start really early in the morning or start a little bit later? You know, just depending on if we're going to get a strong wind or not.
Right.
And weather hasn't been as important, I feel like, on this end of things. In the east, there was a lot of rain. We hit probably like a straight week of just rain and like a day it hailed and like just a lot of downpouring rain. So we still check that some, but it's, we're a lot more easygoing with whatever happens.
Like, uh-huh.
We try to plan it out, but we can only plan so much. And yeah.
Cool.
Basically.
Yeah. We almost never start the day with a destination. We have some vague idea of where we want to end up, but we just find day in and day out, it's so different than what we expect. Sometimes we don't sleep well. We may check the weather and it doesn't look good. And then we just are happy and just enjoying life. And, it's a really beautiful time. And other times it seems like everything's going to line up and then get a flat tire or two and hills we didn't know about, more heat than we thought. So it's translated into saying that, we just need to show up, and that's like how we're going to have the most fun and not waste a lot of energy.
Show up with a good attitude, positive attitude.
Right.
Yeah, because we totally do that every day.
You talked about in the blog also just letting go of expectations and kind of controlling, trying to control the outcome.
Exactly.
That was
kind of your moment there on the river, down
and
by
I hope
the river.
That carries on into life too, because I feel like living life is a lot easier if you let it happen to you. And I mean, definitely like, live out your dreams and think about what you want out of life. But yeah, I mean, things happen that you can't plan and don't know what happens. So it's better to live in the moment than to, you know, try to live in false expectations or things you think might happen.
And we've been thinking about this trip for quite a while and actively planning it for almost a year, slowly gathering our equipment. I was reading other people's bike blogs, just kind of getting an idea of what's happening out there in the world of bike touring. And so I realized that I created a lot of expectations for myself in that time of like,
it's hard not to. It really is.
Yeah. Where things seem to be slowing down and we are kind of like starting to check out to not just live in that like fantasy land of this trip and what we expect of it. And we intentionally hit areas that neither of us have really been or explored. but still thinking about those areas for 6 months allowed us to have a pretty concrete idea of what it will be.
Right.
And then we started the actual trip, and point by point, we started to replace the fantasy idea with like the real idea.
So you're just knocking down each domino as you come
to
it. Yeah,
and sometimes it was just like,
exactly.
This is just weird because I pictured this place. And it might have been better than I thought. It might have been worse, but it was just at first like surprising. And then as it's gone along, we just had to like realize we're going to, whatever we picture it to be, it's going to be different once we meet real people and bike down the streets and random things might happen. We might make connections. We might not.
Yellowstone National Park, we thought was going to be awesome.
Uh-huh.
And it's extremely beautiful.
It is a beautiful place. I was there last summer.
And we actually met a guy in Yellowstone that we stayed with in Portland. So it worked out.
Oh, nice.
For sure.
But some really narrow and sometimes kind of shitty roads.
Oh, my gosh. Like, not so great. Awful roads for biking. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Just really awful biking roads. And the tourists are just, you can't get away from them. RVs, you know, a lot of rental RVs that people are driving it for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good place to practice driving an RV. We learned.
People looking at the buffalo, you know, as they go by instead of on the road.
Lots of distractions. The stakes are high. There's like huge cliffs.
Yeah.
And then you guys are on the road in front of them and they're about to sideswipe you or something.
Yeah, and they don't have like a good like public transportation or bus or anything. We were hoping to like drop our stuff off at like a campsite and then bus around the park.
Like in Glacier National Park, there are some hiker shuttles you can actually get into that I've heard of. I haven't done it yet and I would like to someday.
Yeah.
Which is also great because you can get there using Amtrak. But Yellowstone does not have a shuttle service.
No, there's one bus, but it was like $25.
It's $25 for a day pass, but they run like 2 or 3 like routes a day.
So a day pass.
So a day pass is if you're lucky, round go trip. Somewhere and get back.
Yeah,
and but we don't want to get stranded anywhere. So.
Wow, it's a big place.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it out alive.
Yeah, I'm glad too.
So I was curious. There's a couple things I was thinking of as you guys were talking. One was the course that you laid out. Did you set it out pretty concretely with like pre-designed routes, or did you choose your own, or how did you come about the route that you chose?
Basically every day we just decide what to take. We have an iPad along and we use Google Maps a lot. We get people's recommendations, locals, especially if they have some bike knowledge and what would be a good biking road. We definitely learned that more direct roads though. And so a lot of times people will take us to a bike path or, a nicer, road, but it's like gravel or something. And we found that to be really difficult because we just waste a lot of time and don't really get to where we're going or where we need to go. So,
yeah.
But we like that too. So it's a balance between, taking the most direct route because we have, thousands of miles to cover.
Right, right.
But we also want to see the beautiful places. We use an iPad. We have some road maps along.
Yeah, and we somewhat arbitrarily selected, 8 roughly. Or 10 points along the northern tier. The United States that we wanted to hit.
Okay.
Kind of chose
and is this
a few.
The Northern Tier, like Adventure Cycling Association?
No, just the Northern chunk.
Just the
so
top
I looked
half
at
of the
I looked
country.
At their stuff, but there were a lot of like people we wanted to see that weren't on the routes, and
right.
a few places we didn't want to miss going that way. Mm-hmm. We kind of just decided on some random destinations to give us like some direction.
Uh-huh.
But between that, it's worked out really well to just get where we are and kind of see what we feel like doing. I think I expected the research to be easier beforehand, but it's just, even with the internet and an iPad and everything, local knowledge is a lot more fun.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of things that we wouldn't have even known what to search for, but then we show up somewhere and somebody says, oh, we like, have you seen this? And we're like, what's that? And and they tell us how to get there. And so I think there's a lot of, benefits to doing like a predetermined route. And I think we probably would have like had a lot less, situations we got stuck in, not knowing where we were, but but I think the positive is that we go through places that bicyclists may have never like toured through.
For
and
sure,
we see people who have never seen a person ride a bicycle actually like to ride somewhere, not just recreation.
We've been called crazy like so many times, more times than
it's a big compliment, right?
But
I wouldn't take it as a compliment. Yes,
but we're kind of exploring the country in our own path and in. Just kind of like taking the randomness of sometimes we decide to turn right instead of left and we met this person and Mm-hmm. They took us in, and that wouldn't have happened the other way, but there might have been something else out there. I think it's a lot more fun than just following something that somebody else like wrote for us as bike-friendly mm-hmm. yeah. roads and whatnot.
I think something interesting is we have to make a lot of decisions every day.
Right.
A lot of small decisions that add up, you know, and we can't really go back and keep thinking about what if we would have, you know, turned a different way or stopped back there or, like, actually gotten water when we could have gotten water. Yeah, that's another story.
Sounds like a sore point, maybe.
But you just make so many decisions, and we're tired a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so it's decisions made when you're tired, when you're grouchy, when you're frustrated, you know.
Not always in your best shape.
Or when you're feeling great and ecstatic and high on life. Yeah, so that's something that we've learned to just make a lot of decisions back to back and like go with it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So, Brock, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're kind of on the other side. You plan your routes pretty closely. I mean, you follow a...
You know, it's funny because this is a big theme.
That's probably the smart idea.
No, in the past couple shows that we've taped, because I used to be like super anal about like, we're going to stay at this place that night. It's going to cost this much.
I have a
spreadsheet worked out for how much the expenses were going to be.
That's
have mileage to make each day. To the point where my first tour with my wife was down the west coast of the U.S. From Bellingham down to Mexico.
How is that?
To the border. It was great. It was fun. But we also had it planned so tightly that if we had had any mechanical failures or if anything had happened, we wouldn't have been able to complete the trip and still catch our flight, which I had booked before we started, which, again, you know, it's one of those things that it's not bad necessarily, but it gave us far fewer options.
Right.
And it wasn't nearly as spontaneous. And I find the things you can't plan, like you were saying, are the people that you meet, the things that come up along the way. And to arbitrarily skip that just because you want to stick to a timetable, I've found to be a little bit deflating. Yeah. And so over the past couple of shows that we've taped, David, we've actually been talking a lot about that.
Haven't been listening.
Sorry. No, they haven't even released yet. So. So yeah,
okay,
in the next few weeks,
listening.
As you listen to the show, as I'm sure you do religiously every week, I will...
Consistently every 3 months.
No, but we were just talking about the idea that basically... There's a time to plan. There's also a time to like let go of the plans and not be too concerned about just about the raw data.
Yeah.
So I've made a big 180.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we were talking to Tom Allen.
Sorry to your wife.
Oh,
if
it's...
we've influenced that at all.
No, it's okay. No, she actually prefers it that way.
Okay.
I think we discovered similarly to you that you know, if you go out with fewer expectations or fewer presuppositions at least. And kind of let things happen to you, let things come to you, as opposed to kind of trying to force your way through it all.
Yeah.
It's a more interesting experience.
Yeah,
so,
and definitely plan. I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't plan at all. So when we were in the Badlands in South Dakota, we met a guy from Austria who was also bike touring. And
how about another shrimp on the barbie?
Sorry, that's Austria, not Austria.
Austria.
I know
like
that.
Beside Germany.
That was perfect. I think that
was that a 1993 reference. Yeah.
Well done. Right.
Okay. Austria.
But anyways, and he was flying across the country. He had a lot fewer things than we did, but he was also very trim and young. I think he said he was averaging like 100 miles a day.
Wow.
Which he had to like do some translation with kilometers. So I don't know if he actually got that.
Oh,
right,
sure.
But he said he got on a plane to New York City, and he came out of the airport, and he only had a compass, and he went west.
This is at 11 p.m.
Really?
Rolled so as JFK, put his bike together in the airport.
He didn't know what roads he was taking.
Hopped on the interstate, which you're not allowed to do on the east.
Sure.
Got stopped. A cop told him to get off. Then he rode, I think, through like Brooklyn and Queens between
probably 2 really
and 4
like
a.m.
dicey areas.
Wow. Tried to sleep somewhere, got kicked out by a cop.
Yeah.
Tried to sleep in Central Park. Wow. Anyway, this is his first day.
So planning definitely has a place in the world.
Totally, yeah. And you can't pull the Austrian card every time.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But he had really cool stories, so.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Can't judge that.
It's interesting. I do find that if you go kind of as the crow flies, you find roads that that no one uses, which is really fascinating. And I haven't done that as much in the past couple of years, but a couple of years ago, I remember having a couple of experiences of finding like dirt roads that go between farm pastures, like over hills, to the point where like you don't know where you are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exciting if you know how to get yourself out of it eventually.
Right.
Yeah.
And nothing's riding on you, like having a certain place to be at a certain time.
Right.
So, I'm curious. You mentioned highs and lows, so I'd kind of like to hear some stories about both of those.
Hmm.
Pick whichever you will and give me some of your favorite stories. Lows make for better stories, I think.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of them, too. So we have a lot of stories.
Well, what about the water? I heard water come up, and that was kind of a thing. It sounded like maybe you had less than you needed or something.
Oh, that was actually just a couple of days ago coming to Oregon. Stupidly.
We have trouble finding water everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Including Klamath Falls is big in the news right now. Not enough for, like, the ranchers and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What was that?
Falls? Klamath Falls. Oh, yeah, you probably won't go through it.
No, too far we went through another waterfall. That was actually like our saving grace. Do you remember what it was called? I think it started with an M.
I don't.
Coming.
Multnomah?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Were there a bunch of tourists there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
there
the
was
one.
Some. Yeah. Yeah. But we found that place and we're like, water, yes. Because we thought we were going to hit something sooner.
Yeah.
And forgot to pick up, you know, when we had the chance.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's pretty dry east of
there.
Yeah.
It's pretty shockingly hot. But
and there wasn't a lot of shade, so it was pretty brutal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of our like worst moments of the trip was like the third or fourth day. We were in northern Pennsylvania, and we were just riding, and
this is pretty bad.
It was maybe 6 or 6:30 PM and we still had 20 miles or so in us, and then this crazy like thunderstorm came. There's sideways rain and hail, and we fortunately were like close to a gas station, so we ducked in there, and we were waiting it out. And then we went to a restaurant.
It was one of those things where like everything just gets dark.
Yes,
like white.
You want to run for cover, and there was like very little cover.
Gale force winds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then there's a pizza shop that we kind of ran into and waited there a few hours, and just kept raining and raining. So we started asking around and just saying, you know, like, is there a motel anywhere? And everybody kind of. Yeah, has their ideas of what actual distances are, but between by kind of crowdsourcing where the closest motel is, we found there's one about 8 or 9 miles north. But everybody was just like, "Oh, I could not imagine a bicycle on that road between here and there."
Yeah.
It was over a mountain in the Appalachians, and they like the uphill was the uphill was okay, but they were like, "Oh, the downhill, it's a 4-lane highway, and trucks just fly down it, and it's curvy."
And it was dark.
It was dark by then. It was still raining. But at some point, I mean, we were hoping somebody would say, "Hey, but I'll drive you," or "Hey, you can stop by a place." Didn't happen that time.
So no road angels.
Right, no road angels.
Not in Pennsylvania.
Sad.
So it was just one of those moments where this isn't the smartest thing to do, but what else are we supposed to do? Like sleep in the restaurant. So we started riding. We went over the mountain, which took forever, and we're exhausted. Then we went down over the other side. It was completely dark. It was rainy. It was this 4-lane highway.
There were off ramps that we had to, you know, make sure to
That's
very carefully
freaky.
Cross.
Yeah, yeah.
As we're going 70,
and we had tiny, dinky little lights, but they just felt like nothing because there was no street lights. And Heidi was like a half mile ahead of me because I have disc brakes, but she has rim brakes that were really wet.
Yeah,
and so I thought she was really confident, but she was just like,
I was not at all.
Going as slow as she could.
I couldn't stop.
So
it was pretty scary.
She's like a half mile ahead of me, and then my front tire blows out. Careening down this mountain. I kept control of it.
And this, you're towing the bob trailer as
I'm towing a bob trailer.
So this is a lot of momentum.
It's a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
It happened. I could hear it like gushing out, but it was at least enough revolutions that I could keep it under control. But Heidi had the bike pump, and she was a half mile ahead of me.
And just one between you.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
We don't carry two of things, which usually works out.
Right.
Wow.
So she couldn't see me. I assumed she thought that I was probably dead because of the situation when I didn't show up, which was true.
I was starting to get worried, yeah.
Or and maybe like you were angry, just like, why isn't he coming along?
Yeah, I was like, Chris, like, come on.
Those damn disc brakes.
Yeah. so I kind of kept coasting down because
I just wanted some sign, you know, that he was still with us.
I didn't know how else you would, you know, come back, and it's a huge mountain that we were going down, so I didn't want to make her come up. So I kept coasting on my totally flat front wheel and trying to keep control of it.
Wow.
Eventually, Heidi pulled out her cell phone, which fortunately still worked at that point, and we connected, and I said what was going on. So she had a bike partway up the hill, and I coasted partway down, and we changed it under an
overpass.
An overpass of the interstate. And then finally, like an hour later, made our way into a motel, and we're like, wow, this is day three.
Yeah. Why are we doing this again?
We're still in Pennsylvania. Like, yeah, you're like, we haven't even gone anywhere yet.
2 months left of this kind of experience. Yeah.
That's how every day is going to be.
Right.
But we were pleased to find that that's probably been the worst situation we've been in 2 months.
But
and
then
five
you
months
also,
later, so.
There was one time that, so Chris has had a lot of flats.
Yeah, okay.
I think 11. We've stopped counting.
That's quite a lot, yeah.
But you had one, and we had
the
same tires.
In Oregon, or what, Washington?
Same tires.
Yeah.
So I had zero flats until Washington.
Okay.
I was pretty proud of that.
Congratulations.
But
do you steer towards the glass and stuff?
Yeah, well, with the Bob Trail, I don't like to swerve away. So.
That's true. Just bring it on. Bring it at me. Come on.
It's hard. But once Chris actually had a triple flat with both bike tires and his trailer tire.
So all three tires flat at once?
Yeah. Well,
that was a
pretty
low
low. I don't know what it was.
I was going to say, do you know, but you don't.
No, because they kind of went out at different times. One like blew out, and then one was like a kind of slow leak, and then the next one was like really slow leak, but it was all like
it
gash,
wasn't
gash,
going
gash.
The wrong way into a rental car company, was it?
Okay, yeah.
There's your problem. No, that's crazy. So do you guys have tires that, which brand do you prefer?
Was it Schwalbe? Schwalbe?
Yeah,
am I saying that right?
Yeah, I call it Schwalbe. I'm not
Schwalbe.
Sure.
We get the hefty stuff.
And they're Big Apples, which are kind of like balloon tires.
Okay.
It's a nice comfy ride.
Yeah.
And they have some reinforcement. They're not like their ultra, like not
heavy
penetrable.
We have
heavy
pretty fat
ones,
tires.
But,
a lot of other bike tours kind of scoff at our tires. Like, those are so big. We're just like,
it feels good when
feels
you have
good.
Bad roads and gravel
totally.
And
go over gravel
all
and potholes and all those things. When we're carrying so much weight, it really helps.
Yeah, I highly recommend it.
I trust Schwalbe almost implicitly.
Yeah.
They're a pretty good tire. I've been happy with them. Like the one that I've got on my bike now, I've had on since last summer before my tour. So it's been,
wow.
And you have...
That's pretty incredible.
You also like, not Continental. What was the...
Well, I've had good luck with the Schwalbe
Marathon
Plus.
Okay.
I had some on my bike that I didn't flat in like 2 years.
Okay.
So
I
trust those. The Marathon Plus.
Marathon Plus. Oh, okay. Those are
Schwalbe. But I use the Panaracer T-Serve.
Okay.
Just because they're lighter.
Right.
And I'm kind of...
Well, and you do
like
some racing
like,
too, so...
Yeah. Not on that touring bike, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's not your cross bike?
I don't get flats with those Panaracer T-Serves.
Oh, that's good.
It's the... it's the ones for messengers or something.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyways, they've got some flat resistance, but not nearly as good as the Schwalbe.
Right.
Anyways.
Bulk versus speed is usually your kind of trade-off with tires.
Yeah, but, you know, if you have a big tire, it's they do better at deflecting objects. So
right.
I use, like, a 35C. The ones you're using are much wider than that.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised
they're
to hear
overkill,
you so many.
We have fun.
Yeah. I'm all for overkill.
Yeah.
Personally. I just don't like changing flats. So, like, the more resistance there is between me and a sharp object, the better I feel about it. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So flat tires. Water, wind, camping. Did you guys camp mostly for free?
On the East Coast, we did a lot more where there was like forests, pretty reliably. When we hit the grasslands and the plains and stuff, it was a lot harder. We still did a few times, when there weren't options, just kind of next to a ranch somewhere. But
we were in natural grasslands a couple times, and in natural grasslands and national forests, you can camp anywhere.
Right,
that it's like not. Yeah. I guess it's all public.
Yeah. Dispersed camping, I think, is what they call that, which I love.
Yeah.
So
cool.
We had a couple. Camping spots in the natural grasslands.
Nice.
Out east where there's like fewer campgrounds, but also just a lot more opportunities to duck into woods. And then just before we got into Portland, after we got on this side of the Cascades and there were trees again, and we were like, all right.
Yeah.
So we stealth camped right next to the Columbia in a really beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to hide when there aren't trees.
Yeah,
it's
there's nothing
funny.
To hide between. You don't even think about it. Like, trees are just like normal where we come from. It's like...
Totally.
It's like a whole month and we hardly saw trees.
Yeah.
Other than a few pines here and there, but...
Do you have a preference? Because, I mean, it sounds like you quit your job, so you're probably trying to save at least some money. So is free camping the preferred option if it's available, or do you guys go for campgrounds just for...
I mean,
like...
anything free is good.
Okay,
free is good, but... I mean, we definitely like the mix, because when you're stealth camping or dispersed camping, you have a lot more privacy, which is really fun.
Yeah.
That is nice.
Sometimes you're close to a road, but otherwise, like, you can have a lot more, like, solitude and... but there's not running water, so you need to plan really far ahead. You need to carry a lot of extra water.
Mm-hmm. And just a simple thing like having a table to set things on or to, you know, put our stove on and make some dinner.
We're kind of crouched in the woods.
That's been nice.
It's nice to shower on really hot days and there's no showers when you're...
No showers in the woods.
Sometimes there's a river or something, but... Yeah. So it's really worked well, too, when we have an opportunity to do it for free and we don't need a shower yet, we can do that.
We did set up a shower once in the woods.
Okay.
It was a camp spot that didn't have showers, so we just kind of
water bottles, put our tarps, squirt them on each other.
No, we made like a legitimate shower. We have this huge
water bladder,
6 liter water bladder.
Yeah.
Nice. And it has a tiny little spout that you can kind of hang it up, and it squirts out.
There we go.
And so we put our tarp around some trees that were close together and made a little makeshift shower,
kind of like a hunter's shower. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've dreamed about that. I've thought about bringing like a. Like a pop-up tent or something, you know, about the size of a Port-a-John or something. But but I've never actually looked for one or tried
it. Pretty great.
But a tarp, it sounds like, does the same thing.
It does. Mm-hmm.
And it's lighter, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tarps have been great on this trip.
Yeah.
Don't go on a bike tour without tarps. At least two. We have two. And, yeah, we probably could have used a third one sometimes when it was, like, really rainy. But
yeah.
I bring, like, six or seven.
Yeah. There we go.
And you use them all at some point.
I was going to ask, it sounds like the shower is a pretty creative use. Are there other creative uses for tarps besides, like, sleeping on or under that you've had?
Really quick shelters.
Okay.
When a storm rolls in really fast.
Yeah.
We've had a couple times.
Jackknife my trailer, put her bike on the other side, and... put the tarp over us and just kind of huddle there and wait.
That's a definitely last resort.
It looks really pitiful from the side of the road.
We can stand a lot of rain getting pelted on us before we stop and put the tarp over, but we've done that at least a handful of times.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Just if it's like itchy grass or something, lay it on to put everything on.
Or packing things up. You can just throw them all there so everything doesn't get dirty and then put them one there by one go. Into the panniers and trailer.
Perfect.
And,
or wrap it up in a giant bindle and just kind of toss it in.
There you go.
Yeah.
If we lost all of our bags, we could use that.
A couple of tarps and a giant stick over your shoulders.
Exactly.
We definitely feel like bike touring veterans at this point.
Yeah.
I feel like when we first started, it was like, what were we thinking? Like, we did this and this and this. And now, I mean, not that we're perfect or like we can't learn anymore,
but you're pretty close.
Not at all. Not at all. And I'm sure there's like tons more that we're going to learn on this trip. But I just feel like we have it a lot more together.
Yeah.
Like now than we did 2 months ago, which is a good feeling.
I mean, just make a mistake and learn something, make another mistake and learn it next time. And that's just kind of been the whole trip. And then at some point you accumulate some knowledge and it's surprising, but it works.
Yeah.
Maybe the positive spin will be research and development. Yeah.
So back to a high point question. So I was reading on your blog about somewhere in Idaho where you were camping on a river.
Clearwater National Forest.
And I mentioned it earlier, but that sounded like a really special day to you guys.
Thanks for bringing us back to the high points because we kind of forgot the question. It's nice to like be able to vent to people, but no, we've had a really wonderful trip. And the best moment for me, I usually am a person that can't choose best moments or best anything. Favorite beer, favorite restaurant. But this is a moment that just kind of like, to me, shown... the intensity and beauty and everything of the trip kind of coming together. We're going through Clearwater National Forest, which is just into Idaho.
Yeah, on the Lhoxa River.
Mm-hmm. A little bit in Montana and then into Idaho.
We just 100-something miles of wilderness, river next to us the whole time, just kind of gushing river. Beautiful forest, hardly anybody there. Found a few different really great campsites just kind of by ourselves on the river. And to me, it just, I don't know, it felt like just a moment of a lot of our expectations had not been realized in like we mentioned Yellowstone, which is like, a little bit of a letdown. It felt like we're almost to the west. Like maybe we just need to kind of accept like what's come so far, the little things that, you know, come up. But this moment, just like in the woods, riding bikes, just feeling so good about like we had arrived in wilderness and we had we had made it this far. And I don't know. I think I just kind of had what we talked about earlier about learning to like release and let go.
Mm-hmm.
The whole conversation is kind of an epiphany that I feel like we had in that together.
Yeah.
Just realizing that. This place we didn't even know existed had provided like one of the best moments of my life.
Totally.
Whereas the places that we had planned out and were waiting a year to get to and then got to and they were loaded but hadn't delivered. So just kind of this realization that, you know, I can't force my life. I can't force beautiful moments. I can't just show up somewhere and say this is going to be a wonderful moment because I decided. But you still need to just kind of like show up and keep just hanging in there until that moment does come. And I don't know, I just had been so future oriented for so much of the trip. That was like the first moment that it all just kind of like culminated into the present. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's okay that like, we're going to keep biking tomorrow and it's not going to be forever. But like having this moment of clarity, in life is just a really profound moment. I think for both of us.
And I think just the beauty of that part in Idaho just really overtook me. It just, all this biking and it's like, this is definitely the most beautiful part. Like, and it was funny because just the night before, we were like, what's been your favorite part? What's been your favorite part?
Uh-huh.
And we didn't really have one or just had like small ones and a lot of them. But then the next day is when we came into this just amazingly gorgeous, like the most beautiful place I've ever been. And we felt really overwhelmed by it. And the sun was shining and the water was gushing and it was hot. So we like... stopped a couple times in the river and really soaked that all in. So there's parts like that just really overwhelm us. And it's great. Biking,
you didn't
great.
Even have to pay for that. That was free.
No, we didn't.
That was
and
great.
It was so great biking through. Like, that's the other thing. Like, sometimes we can bike to awesome places, but it's the best when we're biking through them and can really just take it all in, you know, instead of being in a car.
Like, this is in an awesome place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Great story.
Yeah, I find that oftentimes, just like you're saying, like kind of the main event or whatever is supposed to be billed as a great spot. They're great, I'm sure, but like they have so much buildup and so much hype.
Yeah.
That it's almost the expectation is too high. So so when you encounter something just kind of happenstance, it's wonderful.
And being alone in nature and not a lot of people around, I feel like has really just helped us a lot. And I think that's why that place was so awesome too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of getting away from people in general.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's good to be around people, I think, most of the time, but every now and again, you need to work your way away from it and get some time to yourself.
And we love
reset.
People. We've met a lot of great people along this trip and, you know, most of the times when I talk to people that come up to us, but we've also noticed that or found that, with this trip, we have hardly zero privacy.
Uh-huh.
On our bikes, we kind of make a scene wherever we go. You know, we have all of our gear. And so anyone that's like remotely interested will probably come up to us.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, great, I want to talk to someone. Like, I have a lot of energy and like they seem cool or like whatever. They're really interested. And other times it's like, really? Like, I don't know if I have energy for you. Like, you don't pick up on cues that we're trying to leave and, you know.
Yeah, some people don't get cues.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, so privacy is something we're lacking too, and I feel like something we're really excited for to have again someday.
It's kind of the best and worst part of bike touring.
Because
I mean, when you're in a car, you have total privacy. Your windows are up. You can go out and meet people if you want, but like you can retreat. When you're in an RV or a house, you can do the same thing. But people just like, we're at our campsite, just getting ready for bed. And then like, I mean, outside of our tent, but like people just walk up and just start a whole conversation.
Right.
And
so, tell
like,
us everything.
Right. Exactly. I think especially in places like Yellowstone where people are there to be like tourists and take things in and like kind of consume experiences.
You
know?
Yeah.
We felt very much like consumed by people that like,
hey Marge, look
were, like,
at these folks.
At this cool
exactly.
thing, and then,
yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
You guys got here. And like,
yeah.
Pretty shallow conversations that were kind of answering the same questions over and over.
Yeah.
And
you'd rather
really...
tell them like, this is something that really cool I was thinking about the other day, but
exactly.
instead you're like, oh, it's X number of miles. There's some wind. Yeah.
Or like, I want to hear about other people too.
Thousand pounds
like,
of gear.
I'm sick of hearing our story.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Ask Brock and I some questions.
Well, I was curious. First of all, I noticed that the Kvatica Stout has been opened.
Yes,
so what's the assessment of that?
Fantastic. Oh my gosh, it's one of the so
thicker,
flavor.
Yeah, thicker, darker, and what
this
tongue coating? I think is one
oh,
of
yeah.
the
throat coating.
Throat coating. Mm. And yeah. chocolate.
Right.
My tongue and chocolate.
Don't try to sing after this, but yeah, that's one of my favorite stouts. It's pretty good.
It's pretty delicious.
So the second question I had in mind after the beer was if you guys are you've been doing this bicycling thing, and obviously like you're looking forward to getting some privacy, kind of a shell for your collective turtle to retreat into or something. You have. You probably developed some simpler living skills. You may have had some before you left. You've definitely used them all while you've been on the road. What's going to stick with you after the trip, if anything?
That's a good question. I'm looking forward to having drawers again for clothes.
There we go.
So I'm not going to keep getting my clothes out of a bag all the time. What will stick with us?
Yeah, I think it's... We have... a very small amount of stuff that we've been living. I mean, compared to living in an apartment or compared to having places to put things that you don't need to carry at all. We have what by most measure would be a pretty small amount of stuff. But it still really feels like a little more than enough. Like there's always that feeling mm-hmm. that, I have probably one more set of clothes that I don't actually need. I don't mind just wearing the same shirt over and over as long as we can wash them. And like, just having a few essential things that we depend on, but not having anything extra. I think it's something that I've realized in the past, but it's hard to not kind of let that slip away when you have space to put things.
Yeah.
But that the fewer things I have, the less protective I feel of them too.
Mm-hmm.
We go into grocery stores or restaurants or whatever, just about everywhere, and we leave everything we have except for kind of a couple of valuables that we bring in one, like our wallets and iPad and stuff. But everything else is just out there for hours. And if somebody stole our bikes, if they stole our gear, we'd be in a bad situation. But,
yeah,
but
yeah.
at the same time, there's nothing else we can do. We can't roll my trailer into a restaurant. We can't. So there's just this release of, you know, we have a couple things, so worst case scenario, we'd get by. But we'll leave our stuff, and nobody's ever messed with it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a respect
yeah.
that, like, this is all...
Except for Ravens in Yellowstone.
Ravens,
okay, yeah.
Ravens actually unzipped my front pack.
Those things are devious.
They
wow.
can unzip yeah. zippers.
People have been cool, but Ravens, man.
Just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And so a couple of people there, when we got back, told us that a Raven had indeed unzipped my front pack, started digging through my stuff, and then flew away with a packet of figs.
He's like,
blew
that's the
my
good
mind.
Stuff.
I'm like, thank you for not taking my wallet or my cell phone or whatever else was in there.
He's like casting phones and cash aside. I know there's figs in here somewhere.
Yeah.
Oops. You know what? That's my, excuse me. Sorry about that. I'm going to have to
no
call
problem.
Work and check in sometime soon. Well, let's see what else. Yeah.
I've got a question.
Please do.
So
stop my stammering.
So you mentioned that you have quit your jobs. You're doing this trip,
mm-hmm.
San Francisco, endpoint. Then what? What are you guys doing next?
So in August, we're moving to Mexico City for 3 years. We're doing it with Mennonite Central Committee, which is an NGO affiliated with the Mennonite Church. Chris is doing, well, I'll let you explain your position later. I will be doing something in nursing and public health. The position is yet to be determined, so it's kind of a leap of faith.
Kind of
to be doing
air.
This without knowing what I'm doing, but yeah, I'm confident that we'll find something good. And then Chris's position.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing some kind of policy work. I don't fully understand, but MCC works throughout Latin America, so I'll be traveling around various sites and trying to figure out kind of what issues are going on with government policies, both the U.S. and local stuff, and corporations, and then. Doing some writing for the U.S. and Canada kind of about these issues and how to support these communities. And, a lot to be determined. But
sure.
Should say that we started the day of the trip that we were about to start our bike trip is when we actually got offered this position. So
there we go.
We were going to leave in like an hour
yeah, and then
out of my parents' house on our bikes.
Wow.
Yeah. So we had
we
to resign from our jobs, you know, 6 or 8 weeks before this. So it still was kind of this leap of faith. We don't know if we're going to be unemployed after this for a while
right.
or what happens.
Our plan B was to travel around the world
okay.
for a year or so and then start grad school. But we're doing MCC instead, which will also be awesome.
Yeah. But it's been a really, it turned out to be a really great time for a trip because it's kind of allowed us some time, a lot of time to ourselves to kind of reflect on life and the things that we left back in Philly and that we'll be moving to in Mexico City. Just to kind of pare down a bit of the responsibilities and the connections that we don't go into this blindly. And bike trips are just a really good time to think. Like, one of the few activities I find that I just like force myself to sit there and think because it doesn't take much to just pedal. And it's a long day and I can't read. I can't. It's sometimes hard to talk when it's really windy or we're in front of each other. So a bike trip is a really good time to think about kind of life changes.
But you can listen to the Sprocket podcast.
Yes,
that's true.
Which we did.
That's
it was
true.
Actually
well,
really nice.
Thank you.
Better than my thoughts. By
yeah.
Far.
Well, it's also Philadelphia and Mexico City are a long ways apart from each other. And most times, most people in this world that we live in today, this modern world of ours, are zipping from place to place. So if you've got a long ways to travel, you travel there as fast as you can. You're not bicycling all the way to Mexico City, but you are traveling.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool. You're traveling a great deal of the way, kind of under your own power. Mm-hmm. So you have the advantage of, kind of having almost a transition at human scale. So you're not just kind of yanking yourself out of one situation and dropping yourself right into another. You, like you're saying, you have that time for, transition both in your headspace and, kind of in, your life rhythm or whatever. So,
It's interesting the kind of dichotomy between the country feeling so much bigger in a lot of ways, seeing kind of all of the different worlds that make up the United States.
It's a lot.
But then also
a
seeing a lot smaller, like Portland's in biking distance of Philly. Like, who'd have thought? Like, it feels like even though it's been 2 months and most people could fly in a few hours, the country feels a lot smaller. And I think spatially... just realizing that there's like a lot of different people and they all have different beliefs about the world and lifestyles and whatever, but seeing them kind of living in their space, I think even though we haven't biked through Mexico, though I'm sure that'd be a great interesting experience. but I think it still kind of connects this various people and makes the world feel a little bit smaller and tighter and that we can make in a lot of different environments and think we should be able to make it in Mexico City too.
Totally. Yeah. And you can kind of connect those dots between the people that you've met and the places you've been to in your head as well as on the map, which kind of, like you say, it makes it feel like it's actually accessible. Like this is, they are connected by something. And that's something I think we miss a lot in most modern travel. So, so that's great. Nice. Well, good luck to both of you. I hope this goes well. And again, the website is Cyclical Simplicity. That's CYCLICAL simplicity.com. And I believe, are you guys going to be updating that with the end of your tour?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
All
right. So, folks that hear this can go back and get the entire story.
Yeah.
And there's so much we didn't cover, but again, we can't compress it all in. So thank you so much for taking the time to share the stories.
Thank you for having us. This has been wonderful.
It has been great.
Definitely.
It's really been a pleasure to get to know you.
You too.
I just met you yesterday, and I do echo what you were saying. I feel like friends.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we're
definitely friends.
If you're ever in Mexico City in the next 3 years,
there we go.
We can give you a place to stay and show you around.
Me personally, or like all the people listening to this?
Oh, shoot. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
You probably have good listeners.
I was directing at you, Brock, and at you, David. But
Perfect.
It's been such a close interaction. We forgot we're being listened to here.
No Why more triple flats either.
Oh,
it's not
seriously.
Out.
Yeah.
Cut that out. No, that's great. Is there anything else you guys wanted to share before we close it out?
Just thanks a lot.
Cool.
We love Portland. It's been a great time being here, and we're excited for the coast.
The coast is glorious.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff down there.
I've never been there, so I'm like so pumped right now. High on life.
Yeah, it's a good city that really has like-minded people to us and. It just feels very much like we've arrived here, even though we're still not quite on the coast. It feels like we've arrived somewhere where kind of this ride is appreciated and bicycling is seen as a smart form of transportation, not just a crazy thing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. Very good. All right. Well, we will talk to you soon, I'm sure. And good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks
thank
so
you,
much.
Chris. Thank you, Heidi.
Take care.
And David, thank you.
You
want to read the credits or you want me to?
I will.
All right. You got it.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774.
And you can text us too.
You can text us too. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder. Find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
I swear we'll have news again someday soon. I swear it. All right. Bye bye, everybody. I try and do the music and stuff live whenever I can, so it makes it feel important, even if it maybe
isn't.
Do you
have news events and stuff?
No.
I try and pick you up, if that's okay. All right. I figure we know each other well enough.
This is Chris. Can you hear me?
This is me. Hello.
We're perfect.
Perfect.
Try to talk as naturally as possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
Know, we're despite everything.
Yeah.
And just pretend there's not a mic right here.
Oh yeah. And only if you want them. And also the other thing I think that I've learned is that you never like hearing your own voice.
It's true.
Yeah. I don't even like it now, and I've heard a lot of my own voice.
You have a nice voice.
You do have a good radio voice.
That's nice of you to say. But what I mean is that I can understand it's unnatural.
Okay. It is.
All right. Well, let me queue up some stuff.